Black Women in America, next on Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Join me now for the first of four programs for Black History Month 1994. Historian and editor Darlene Clark Hine is here now to read from and talk about Black Women in America, an historical encyclopedia.
Black women have been excluded from the American historical record. This encyclopedia puts them in your face and says, you cannot exclude us any longer. And you think about what it is that we read, the
right.
kinds of books that we study from,
right.
as long as any group is left out, then that history is inaccurate. It's a lie.
Historian and editor Darlene Clark Hine. She'll be back in just a moment with readings and a conversation about Black Women in America, an historical encyclopedia. This program is part one of Soundings for Black History Month 1994. Partial support comes from Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas. Soundings is a cultural affairs service of the National Humanities Center. Just before the holidays last year, an activist coalition called the Congress of Black Women took a stand against gangster rap music. The coalition denounced gangster rap as demeaning to women, and especially black women. While this criticism is recent, such groups have long been a part of American society, and now they are increasingly the subject of serious attention from professional historians. In part one of a series of programs for Black History Month 1994, Soundings is proud to present a conversation about black women in America. That's the title of a new historical encyclopedia. The supervising editor of Black Women in America is Darlene Clark Hine, a professor of history at Michigan State University. Her books include studies of black women in the profession of nursing and black women's culture and community in the Midwest. Black Women in America presents more than 800 entries, including nearly 650 biographical summaries and a comprehensive chronology. It features contributions by more than 400 experts in African American culture and history. In scope, Black Women in America ranges from slave plantations to civil rights activists, spanning 300 years from 1692 through 1992. Coretta Scott King called the two-volume encyclopedia an indispensable guide to the achievements of African American women who helped to shape the nation's history and culture. Darlene Clark Hine begins now with a reading that suggests the purpose of Black Women in America.
Frederick Douglass wrote to Harriet Tubman in 1868. He said, "The difference between us is very marked. Most that I have done and suffered in the service of our cause has been in public, and I have received much encouragement at every step of the way. You, on the other hand, have labored in a private way. I have wrought in the day, you in the night. I have had the applause of the crowd and the satisfaction that comes of being approved by the multitude. While the most that you have done has been witnessed by a few trembling, scared, and sore-footed bondmen and women whom you have led out of the house of bondage and whose heartfelt, God bless you, has been your only reward. The midnight sky and the silent stars have been the witness of your devotion to freedom." One of the important dimensions of black women's lives has been resistance to racism, to sexism, to all forms of oppression. And Harriet Tubman epitomizes black women's resistance.
Now, how do you put that impulse into the covers of a book, Darlene? I mean, you had a massive task here in front of you. You have more than 800 entries, 641 biographical entries. How did you organize this project?
Well, we wanted to be as inclusive as possible. We wanted to search out the women who were known in their local communities.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to redefine what average means. And We searched the country to find those women who had made outstanding contributions on the local level as well as the national level, but who've been invisible in the historical record.
Now, one of your reviewers talks about getting excited over the fact that the reviewer finds in your book, or your books, Black Women in America, what she calls real black women.
Yes.
How about that?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Real black women as opposed to fictional constructs. Uh-huh. Real black women as opposed to the stereotypes and the distorted images that pervade in our society about black women. We wanted black women who were actually on the front lines, who were constructing community, who were developing institutions, who were educating and nursing and providing all kinds of inspiration to black people.
What about the term fugitive material? One of your colleagues, a historian up at Princeton, uses that term to characterize what, the sources or the themes that you're dealing with?
Nell Painter, who is on the editorial advisory board and one of the sponsors of the project, wrote an excellent essay on Sojourner Truth, used that phrase, fugitive history, meaning that the materials have been there all along, but scholars and writers have ignored them. Mm-hmm. And this encyclopedia makes all of that very visible and very accessible.
You say, for instance, Darlene Clark Hine, that when you began your professional life as a historian, you yourself were caught up short in the invisibility of the lives of black women. Am I right?
Precisely. When Shirley Hurd, who's an Indianapolis school teacher, called me back in 1980 and said that she wanted me to write a history of black women in Indiana, I thought, this is the weirdest request I have ever heard of.
Yeah, you don't make a request for a history book the way you order a fast food hamburger.
Exactly. And after I told her that in a very patronizing manner, she said, well, look, I still want you to write this history book. And I said, but look, I can't write the history book because there are no sources. Getting back to that fugitive material again. Uh-huh. And just so happened that Shirley Hurd, who was a member of the National Council of Negro Women, Indianapolis section, she and her friends had spent 2 years collecting all of the primary material that I needed to write that book.
And that was part of the inspiration for these two volumes in your
encyclopedia. That was back in 1980. So my own involvement in this project stems back from to that call back in 1980. And all of those primary materials were in the women's homes. Uh-huh. And much of black women's history has been locked away in the basements and the attics.
This is what you really call history from the ground up. That is to say, looking at what appear to be invisible, trivial, unimportant kinds of materials.
But when you put them all together, when you essentially reclaim the past, mm-hmm. and tell the story and put black women into the broader historical context, then you can stand back and say, my goodness, I never knew that they had contributed so much.
Let's talk about some of the images, the myths, stereotypes is a word that comes to mind, Darlene Clark Hine. Let's talk about some of the stereotypes that you and your colleagues wanted to offset in this publication, Black Women in America. Three pretty ugly words or phrases we can put on the table here. Mammy, Aunt Jemima, and Sapphire. How about it?
And you might as well add Jezebel.
Jezebel. Mm-hmm. And in the modern rap lingo, we got the hoe and the bitch.
Exactly.
There's a lot of baggage to unpack here.
We wanted to blast those stereotypes to smithereens, as Robin Gilson wrote in a review. Uh-huh. And so what we did was to ask people to write essays on those specific stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And we find in retrospect, looking back, that the Sapphire of the 1890s and the turn of the century is the bitch of today. The Jezebel of the turn of the century is the hoe of today. In other words, those stereotypes have new names, but they still exist and they still devalue and demean and distort black women. And we have to wipe them off the face of the earth.
Now, let me be a little contentious with you, Darlene Clark Hine. Where do they come from? I mean, are they purely constructions of white racism?
Those earlier stereotypes are constructions of white male racism and sexism. And why are stereotypes so potent? Why do they exist? They exist to devalue people, to demean. And once you can strip a person of that of that person's humanity, then you can treat that person any damn way you want to treat that person. And if the people believe and subscribe to those stereotypes, then they will answer to them. And anytime you answer to negative, distorted images of yourself, then you are disempowered.
Now, do we have to wait as many years, generations to offset the negative weight, the burden of those stereotypes, as it took for them to build up?
Unfortunately, we don't have to wait. And one of the things about this encyclopedia, why I'm so excited about it, is that this two-volume set stands as a testament to the truth of Black women's history. Black women's history is on a mission. The writers, the scholars, we're out to discover the truth, to reclaim the truth, to disseminate the truth.
Does that make you suspect in the eyes of the wider historical profession, Darlene Clark-Hine? That is to say, historians are supposed to be dispassionate and objective. They don't take up causes. They are free of ideology. Now, of course, I've got my tongue in my cheek here. Let's unpack that one for you.
Well, that's a lie, first of all. Historians are no more free of ideology than the most rabid polemicist. It's a lot of crock. It's a lot of baloney to suggest that historians come to the table with a blank slate. And most of us make it. Most of us succeed by taking on issues and rewriting or rethinking or repackaging them so that they help other people. And the negative images, the omission from the historical record, has not helped Black women, has not inspired them to achieve the true greatness that I think that they're capable of.
Again, let me be a little argumentative with you, Darlene Clark-Hine. We're talking about your two volumes here. You're the chief editor, Black Women in America. This is the work of hundreds of people. We want to make that very plain. If the aims of the work are inclusive, why is it that you don't have any men in this book?
Well, I must correct you right off the bat. We do have men in this book. We have four Black men in the book.
Now, who are they?
There are entries on Frederick Douglass,
right?
Booker T. Washington, Marcus Garvey, and W.E.B. Du Bois.
Now, you don't see that as an exercise in exclusion. I mean, obviously, you have a rationale at work here. Explain this to me.
We wanted this encyclopedia to focus on Black women. We selected these men because of their views, because of their attitudes, because of their actions that helped Black women achieve education or liberation. Now, whenever I go around the country, people are often very ill at ease to listen to me talk about Black women.
They want to get the conversation back to the men.
They want to get it back to the men. They want to move it to white women. It's very hard to focus attention on Black women. This is an encyclopedia about Black women. Black women have been the ones excluded from the historical record, and now we're trying to write that history. Leonida McLean was the first Black member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board, and she wrote shortly before her suicide, "I am burdened daily with showing whites that Blacks are people. I am, in the old vernacular, a credit to my race. I am my brother's keeper and my sister's, though many of them have abandoned me because they think that I have abandoned them. I run a gauntlet between two worlds, and I am cursed and blessed by both. I travel, observe, and take part in both. I can also be used by both. I am a rope in a tug of war. If I am a token in my downtown office, so am I at my cousin's church tea. I assuage white guilt. I disprove Black inadequacy and prove to my parents' generation that their patience was indeed a virtue. I have a foot in each world, but I cannot fool myself about either."
Darlene Clark Hine, we just heard you read here from Black Women in America, your two-volume encyclopedia. This is the voice of Leonita McLean. Tell me who she was.
Leonita McLean was the first Black staff member of the Chicago Tribune. Mm-hmm. She committed suicide in 1984.
And this passage speaks to what? The tensions that she felt.
The tensions that she felt of about having a foot in both worlds, mm-hmm. as she put it, of being a successful Black woman, yet still being confronted with discrimination and racism and sexism, the tug of war that she was engaged in. And I read it because I want people to know that not all Black women have been triumphant and transcendent, mm-hmm. and survive the devilish experience of being torn asunder and constantly under the pressure.
Now, a note that we could add to that observation about Leonita McLean is that, unfortunately, for us today in the 90s, we tend to think many times of Black women in terms that are not quite stereotypical, but they go to the notorious. That is to say, they go to the sensational. They go to the world of entertainment. We could unravel a list of names here all the way, from Whoopi Goldberg and Oprah Winfrey to Sister Soldier, that sort of thing. My impression, Darlene, is that you want to take Black women in America to the public in forms that don't speak just to those rather more sensational, entertainment-oriented kinds of achievements.
Nor do I want to undermine those entertainment kinds of achievement.
Uh-huh.
Because when I think of Hattie McDaniel, and we have a long description of her in the encyclopedia, mm-hmm. who was forced to play mammy roles in film after film, but who did so because, as she said, she'd rather play a maid than be one, yet she could not get the kinds of roles that her talent certainly equipped her to do.
Let me just rattle off here a list of names, Darlene Clark Hine. I mean, these are people that are clearly not household names.
Yes.
And yet they are important to your work as a scholar in what you have done here in Black Women in America. Phyllis Wheatley.
One of the first poets in American history during the time of the American Revolution.
Goes back to the 18th century.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Jenny Slew.
Jenny Slew was the first Black woman to successfully sue for freedom. She won her freedom in 1765.
Susan McKinney Stewart.
Susan McKinney Stewart was the first Black woman to practice medicine in New York State.
Mary McLeod Bethune.
Mary McLeod Bethune, a great woman, founded the National Council of Negro Women in 1935 and was the first Black woman to hold a federal appointment.
Fannie Lou Hamer.
Fannie Lou Hamer, one of my favorites, was very active in the Civil Rights Movement, and in 1964 she challenged the Democratic Convention for its refusal to seat Black representatives from Mississippi.
Now here's a name that a lot of people might recognize, Rosa Parks.
Rosa Parks is referred to as the mother of the Civil Rights Movement because she refused to give up her seat to a white man in 1955. But before that, she was active in the NAACP and in Black women's organizations in Montgomery, Alabama.
How about Barbara Jordan?
Barbara Jordan was the first Black woman to be elected to the House of Representatives from a southern state, Texas.
Here's a wonderful name, Madam C.J. Walker.
Madam C.J. Walker was the first self-made woman millionaires in this country.
Uh-huh. Black woman or the first female?
The first female, uh-huh. self-made millionaires in this country, and she made her fortune in the cosmetic industry.
How about Ruby Hurley?
Ruby Hurley was an NAACP field representative who in 1955 went from plantation to plantation questioning people about the murder of Emmett Till.
We're going to hear about a fictionalized account of that terrible incident in American history later on Soundings during Black History Month. The novelist Lewis Norden will be here to talk about his book, Wolf Whistle. That's just a little forward promotion there, Darlene. A couple of more names for you. Jackie Joyner Kersee.
One of the greatest women athletes of all times.
How many gold medals did she win? I mean, just
at least a half dozen.
We all know the name Ella Fitzgerald. We know the name Lena Horne. How about the person whose picture appears on the cover of your encyclopedia? And that would be Anna Julia Cooper.
Anna Julia Cooper wrote in 1892 a book that's considered the first black feminist text. It was called A Voice from the South by a Woman of the South.
And this was what? This was fiction, nonfiction?
No, this was a collection of essays, her own writings. And I should also add that at the age of 66, she went to the Sorbonne and received her PhD degree. She lived from 1858 to 1964.
Darlene Clark-Hine, we're talking about Black Women in America. You are the editor of this two-volume encyclopedia. I want you to read to me yet again from this wonderful collection.
Fannie Lou Hamer, in an interview in 1965, said, "I was determined to see that things were changed. I am determined to give my part not for what the movement can do for me, but what I can do for the movement to bring about a change." She continued, "I do remember one time a man came to me after the students began to work in Mississippi, and he said the white people were getting tired and they were getting tense and anything might happen. Well, I asked him how long he thinks we have been getting tired. I have been tired for 46 years, and my parents were tired before me, and my parents were tired, and I have always wanted to do something that would help some of the things I would see going on among Negroes that I didn't like and that I don't like now."
Darlene Clark-Hine, we just heard you read here to us yet again from Black Women in America. This is the voice of Fannie Lou Hamer in an interview in 1965. This is the lady who said, "I'm just sick of being sick and tired."
I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. And to that I say amen. But the thing that excites me now, I think Fannie Lou Hamer would be very, very proud of this encyclopedia and what it represents. And what it represents is that black women have finally arrived.
Now, let me be argumentative with you yet a third or fourth time here, Darlene Clark-Hine. There are critics who say that the kind of history that you do isn't really history or education. It's a form of therapy. It's a form of self-help, that kind of thing. What do you say to these critics?
I've heard it often, that black history is feel-good history, that we need to move away from black history. We don't need to teach it anymore. It should be totally integrated into American history. And I'm somewhat bewildered and puzzled by it, because it seems that just just when black women arrive in American history, everyone wants to change the rules of the game. History has always been feel-good history. We always have taught history in order to inspire people. Black history is no different. And as long as we live in a racist, sexist, classist society, we need black history.
Do you think that we're moving, that's pretty strong, that statement you just made, Darlene Clark-Hine. Are we moving at all in the right direction, given the impulses that inspired and the aims that underscore your encyclopedia here?
Well, I'm very optimistic and I'm very excited. I think we are moving. We are making progress. And we are making progress in the intellectual arena by producing the kinds of histories that are inclusive. I mean, black women have been excluded from the American historical record. This encyclopedia puts them in your face and says, you cannot exclude us any longer. And you think about what it is that we read, the kinds of books that we study from.
Right.
As long as any group is left out, then that history is inaccurate. It's a lie. So we are making strides.
Darlene Clark Hine is the John A. Hanna Professor of History at Michigan State University. She's also the supervising editor of Black Women in America, a two-volume historical encyclopedia. Her co-editors are Elsa Barkley Brown of the University of Michigan and Rosalind Terborg Penn of Morgan State University. Black Women in America is available from Carlson Publishing. This is Soundings, a magazine of ideas and insights from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. In just a moment, I'll tell you where to write if you'd like to have an audio cassette of this week's show. You've been listening to part one in a series of four programs for Black History Month 1994. For an audio cassette of the program you just heard, send $10 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code is 27709. Please ask for program number 697. That's number 697, the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code again, 27709. Include $5 if you'd like to have a complete catalog of Soundings discussions available on audio cassettes. Next week, Soundings for Black History Month 1994 will continue. Writer Lewis Norden will be here to read from and talk about his new book, a novel entitled Wolf Whistle.
Emmett Till was a 14-year-old boy who lived in Chicago with his mother, and he came to visit in the South in Mississippi Delta where I lived, very near to my home, in fact, and he whistled at a white woman in a country store. And for that whistle, he was taken out by two men and tortured and murdered. And those two men were tried by a jury of their peers, 12 white men from Mississippi. This was in 1955, and they were let go scot-free, even though they had admitted in Look magazine that they did the murder.
Writer Lewis Norden, he'll be back next week with part two of Soundings for Black History Month 1994. Thanks for listening to Soundings. Partial support for this program comes from Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas. Special thanks for in-kind assistance in the production of this program go to Carlson Publishing. Soundings is a cultural affairs service of the National Humanities Center.